Welcome to the Round 17 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week we're joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Good, thanks. Didn't have the best Supercoach weekend, but attended a soccer game with 99,000 people, so that happened. Tried to preoccupy myself with things non-Supercoach after the horrific injury to Gary Ablett. A lot of people posting terrible, terrible stuff on social media at the moment, ready to delete their teams and all that, but hopefully we can grit our teeth and make it through the end of the season. Anyway, we do have a special guest on with us this week. Faz, welcome back onto the show, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be back. Unfortunately, not in a great shape, my team right now, but yeah, still happy to be here.
Yeah, bruised and battered, but we're still showing up. So hopefully you guys have a few more trades than we do to deal with the situation. And hopefully none of you went down below three trades to bring Gary Ablett in, like we said, because I'd be crapping my Dax right now if that were the case. So we'll get on to all the scenarios, even what to do for those people with one trade. We did get some questions about that. So before all that, we'll get stuck into the weekly update. Mark, you can start because you won again.
Yeah, I mean, you guys seem all sad and stuff, and Marcus, you're looking for other sports to follow, but he's going all right for me. 23.01 I scored this week, which was obviously not great, but did go up in the rankings a little bit to 581 now. So within striking distance of the top 500, I did have, like I mentioned, Mitchell on field, Ablett on field. I had Rockliffe 50. I also had Jake Lever with 111 and Kane Lambert with 103, both sitting on the bench. Would have been nice to get their scores, but overall, happy to move up and hopefully I can keep going. How'd you go, Faz?
Yeah, I think I split the difference between the two of you this week. I scored 22.35. I don't actually have Gary Ablett in my team. Unfortunately, my alternate option was Dane Beam, so I was sitting there on Saturday afternoon looking pretty happy seeing Gary Ablett go down. Only for Saturday night to roll around, and then Dane Beams was a late out. My midfield bench consists of Andrew Boston, Dan McKenzie, and Carl Amon, so that's 3-0.
None of those guys are playing, yeah.
Yeah, 3-0 right there. So that was a donut on field for the second week running because I had no one to cover Joel Selwood last week as well. So not doing too well in that respect, but at least I had been thinking about bringing Gaz in. I listened to your guys' advice last week and thought it was probably the boat had sailed on that one. So instead of doing a Gaz trade, I brought James Kelly in for Saad in the back line. So that worked out quite nicely. My alternate option was to take Edwards' score from Essendon as an emergency. So that, glad I didn't take
it. Like seven or
wow. I got 5 points somehow. He's kicked a goal.
Jesus.
So I've never seen a player kick a goal and only get 5 points.
Pretty sure it was the only touch he had, though. Didn't do a lot when he came on, and the game was over when he was out there.
That's true. It was pretty quiet. Harking back to earlier in the season with the Lance Franklin versus Tom Mitchell debate, I hedged my bets and went both ways, which didn't work out too well this week. Cause had a 0 from Franklin and a 36 from Tom Mitchell. So,
wow. Yeah,
that possibly explains a little bit of my rank, which, steal yourselves here, guys, 15,000th I'm coming right now, 15,001. So not been my finest season.
A bit of luck involved in this game, mate. Don't take it personally.
That's right. It's all about the luck, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah, Mark, you luck sack. No, you've done really well, mate. And it's good to hear that you've ticked on to 500ths now. So, you know, only one more digit and you're down into the top 500 there, which will be fantastic. I unfortunately slipped out of the top 5,000 this week. I was expecting it to be by a heap more. So I dropped from 4,500 to 5,200th, which I can't complain. I scored 21.54, which gives me, slow clap, the worst score for this week. Just absolutely awful. Just wait till you hear the scores I'm about to. Oxley, 27. Clancy Pierce, 21. Rockliffe, 50. Gary Ablett, 21. Jack Siebel, 68. And Jack Steele on field instead of Kane Lambert. Bontempelli on field ahead of Wallace, who scores 110, and Bontempelli 87. So could not get anything right this week, and furious. Absolutely.
That's just furious. All bad luck, man. All bad luck.
But some of it, the back line's my doing, because I always say trade your rookies out when it's time to trade them out. And Oxley, 27, I feel the pain from that. So considering a double trade this week, because Pierce is potentially out for the season with a dislocated shoulder, I might be down to one trade for 5 weeks to go.
Wow.
Yep. Well, we push it to the limit because we want to do well. My team value is massive, almost 13.6 million. So I've got lots of premiums on bench, but not getting good scores on field. So completely useless at the moment. Tragic, tragic. Anyway, on to, sadly, the league update. So we lost first, which is sad, but we still hung on to 10 of the top 20, which is great. And
8 of the top 10.
Yeah, and we clearly overexposed the Ablett. So hopefully it's just a 1 week blip like we crushed it last week. So fingers crossed, Mark. Let's take a positive attitude toward this. And then our group update, we at least have some good news there. 25-28 by Dom's Blues. How the hell did he score that? That's huge. He moved up to 630th this week.
Still not as high as me.
In 1 week, got pretty darn close though. Well done, Dom. Don't let Mark put you off. Travesty though. Well done, Travesty, who dropped down to 20th over the last few weeks. This week scored 25-12, so only 16 points less than Dom. Shot back up into the top five. He's sitting at fourth now. So wow. Well done to you, Travis. That's a huge, huge week. Coach, sadly, traded in Gazza last week, which is really, really, really unfortunate. And so he slipped down 20 spots to 35th. And
wow, that's a big slime.
And Nate Snags is holding tight at 57th. So he's pretty darn consistent, you mate.
He is.
We'll move off score updates now and finally onto the topic for the week. So that's Gary Ablett out. We got all the questions this week from social media. Again, at SupercoachCoach on Twitter and on Facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. Basically got about 15 or 20 different questions for who to trade Gary Ablett to. So that's pretty much the entire show. It's just looking at all the different options, all the different questions that we got.
Everyone else, just hold on to your trades.
If you don't have Gazza like Faz, this episode might be a bit boring. But right at the end, you can fast forward to the end. We did get a question from Dunny about Tommy Mitchell, who you did a premature celebration about.
Ever since that moment, someone during the week was mentioning that Marcus would be pretty happy that Tommy Mitchell's sucking, but then I did remind them that you chose Buddy as an alternative.
No, no, don't mention that part. We'll get onto that in a little bit. Right now, Gazza. First off, I want to start off with the must-have. So we didn't get as many questions about these guys because a lot of us already have them, but Dangerfield, Pendlebury 5, they're clearly a rank above this season. 5, 126. Dangerfield 121 and Pendlebury with 116. If you don't have any three of these players, would you just side swap Gazza to one of these three?
I don't think it's entirely that obvious. I think that there's a lot of players. There's about a group of about 10 players that I'd be happy to be trading in for Ablett. And look, the ceilings of those three is probably higher than the ceilings of the others.
I rank them as must-haves. Faz, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think Danger's probably the only one that you might just question a little bit, given his price is so high. He's 654, so you're only going to make about $19,000 from a Gary Ablett trade.
I think at this stage of the year, I'm going to consider that price is completely irrelevant for most people, just because if you've got two, three trades left, if you're getting an extra $19,000 in the bank, that's great. If you're not looking to make any more upgrades, then money just becomes irrelevant.
I would beg to differ there, just because I think the only time that money in the bank becomes irrelevant is right when you use your 30th trade and you have zero left, because up until that point, I think it's going to be that guy that's just had a bad run of form, like a Tom Mitchell or something that you have to trade out, and having that extra cash can just mean the difference between getting the guy you want as opposed to having to make a compromise decision. I'm going to keep cash flow as something that I'll be thinking about the whole way through.
Yeah, I'm probably going to split the difference there. I think if I had a lot of cash like Mark, I probably wouldn't be too fussed. But otherwise, I think anything under 100K, you tend to feel it when you have the extra bonus cash there. We'll move on past the must-haves now. A little bit of debate there. I think the only one that we really got a question on was Pendlebury. Either of you sold on Pendlebury being a must-have?
Yeah, I think so. If you don't have him, I would absolutely bring him in. He's a good potential captain choice. Collingwood's come out of a pretty tough part of their draw, and he's got a history of averaging 120 plus.
He's also the most consistent out of the three. I thought Fife was going to be that guy, but he's had a bit of a corky, a bit of a sore leg, so unfortunately a bit quiet. But at least this week he had a return to form, which was nice. Anyway, we'll move on to the other premiums now. Just that step below in the 115 bracket, Hanbury and Pritis are the next two
115.63 is Dan Hannabry's average, and Pretis is 115.56, and Hannabry's $3,000 more expensive at 595,900. So they pretty much have averaged the same. They pretty much cost the same right now. Who do you guys like? They're right at the tip of the tongue this week in terms of consistency. Yeah.
Top I think you could chuck in Mundy to that group as well, because he's averaging over 115 as well, about 115.1, I think. So those three just really, really close over the course of the season. They've scored within 40 points of each other in total and have played every game, which has been a huge bonus. Out of those three, I think that Pretis has been really consistent. I think that most people at this stage seem like they're going to be going to Pretis. The thing that strikes me about his average, though, is that he had a pretty slow start to the year, but he also had the 192 in there. So I think that makes his average seem potentially better than it actually is. If you're going back over his scores over the last couple of months, he hasn't got a lot of scores over the 120 mark, where if you look at Hannabry across the course of the season, game on the weekend was his first really low game, only a couple of scores just below 100, and he's just been consistent and had more games above that 130 mark. So out of those three, for me, it would be Hannabry, then Mundy, then Pretis, which I think is not the order that most people would go.
I would agree in having Pretis as number three, Mark. I agree with that. The 196 really seems to inflate his average. And people could say the same thing about Dangerfield because he has that 188. But the difference is that Danger's got that 121 average rather than 115 that Pretis is sitting on. His next highest is 135, and then you get down to the 120s. I think my pick would actually be Mundy of the three players. I really love the consistency with Mundy. His only two scores for this year under 100 were an 85 and a 99. Also has the capacity to put out the big scores. He got 150, a couple of 133s in there. The one worry, I guess, would be he plays under Ross Lyon, so there's quite a potential that later in the year he could see himself being rested. They got Melbourne in round 22. You can't imagine that at that point they're really going to be having to play for wins. So might have just contradicted myself and talked myself out of Mundy.
And I think the complimentary point to that potentially is that with Sydney's form drop off in the last sort of month, they're probably going to have to fight even harder. I mean, it might be less likely that they're resting players.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hannah's looks like a great pick, to be honest.
No, I agree. I love Dan Hannabry as a pick. I think the fact that he plays in that midfield with Josh Kennedy, Kieran Jack, Tom Mitchell, Luke Parker, he, to me, looks fairly consistently their best midfielder every week. And to be able to do that with that cast is absolutely amazing. So I do think that he's just hands down the best player of the three. I agree with what you're saying about Pretis. If you take that 196 down to a 130, that drops his average by 3 points, which puts him at 112 average, which isn't particularly inspiring, although solid. To the next question now from Billy. He's got four trades left, and he's obviously going to spend one to move Gary Ablett on to go down to three, but he's considering spending potentially another trade this week, so going down to two and upgrading a defensive position, somebody like Hibbard. So he's got one more trade than me. I'm considering doing that with Pierce because he's out. What do you guys think? Would you drop below three trades? I know three trades has been sort of the magic mark for us this year. Would you drop below three trades if that cash you can get from Gary Ablett to a solid option is enough to upgrade? So is perhaps a value player more attractive this week to use as fuel for an upgrade?
I think it's a really different proposition to be looking at someone like Michael Hibbard versus someone like Oxley or Saad or Pierce in your case, or even Brody Smith. I think that Hibbard's not setting the world on fire, but he's not completely sucking either over the course of the season. So I'm not sure that I'd be going down to upgrade Hibbert. If I had one of those weaker options, then with four trades, I'd probably consider it. But I don't think I'd be upgrading Hibbert. What do you think, Faz?
Trying to do upgrades at this point of the year just seems fraught with danger.
Even to potentially somebody like Hodge. And remember, we always talk about Hodge building for a strong finish. In the last 3 weeks, 165, 110, 140. If you can do it to somebody as dominant as Luke Hodge, is that potentially worth dropping to two?
It's definitely tempting. Those scores that Hodge is pumping out look insane. I can't deny that. Hodge right now looks like he could go on a 115 average to the end of the season, and then Hibbard's averaging only 80 for the season. So that's huge amounts of points that you're earning each week with that trade. But I guess it's a bit of a cop-out to say it depends on what else is going on in your team. But if you don't have great bench cover on any line and then you cop an injury there, I feel like I can't advise somebody to use up their trades now. And I know that Billy's got four trades left, so he still has two in the bank to cover for injuries. But I think there's a lot of people sitting a little bit lower than that, and I don't want us to be giving out advice saying if you got four trades, it's okay. Maybe if you got three, it's okay. Because I definitely wouldn't want to be looking at it going down to one trade just to do an upgrade at this point in the season. Because that 35 points per game that you make up now, that could be obliterated with 1 week. If you get an injury, you've got no cover. As I've felt the last few weeks, I had Selwood out, I had Beams out. That's kind of 100 and something points Buddy. Each week that I'm missing. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's very sound advice, Faz. If you've got below four trades, the best way to use your advantage is to hope that people get injured. It's going to be your competitive advantage against the other people that you're playing against, not using it to be doing extra upgrades. As you've said, Faz, it could definitely work out. You could make the trades. You could not even need the other two trades that you've got in the bank. And then you're very happy that you brought in Hodge. But really, your better situation, especially after what's happened with Ablett and so many people going really, really low with trades, I think trades have probably gone up in value a little bit.
I don't know. It tempts me.
14-year-old girl just joined the program.
That's my excitement level for Hodge right now. He's in my team and I'm loving it. He scored 140 this week, guys. Like Faz said, if it's 35 points per week, this is the week to do it. We talked about last week 150 points being the trade benchmark for late in the season. At this point in the season, if you get 35 points for six more rounds, that's huge. That's a 200-point trade right there. Like, that sounds great to me. I think going down the three trades is fraught with danger. So if you have premium cover, I would do it. If you have Bontempelli patrolling the midfield and the forward line with Jack Steele, I would do it. If you didn't, then I probably wouldn't. If your bench is light, I think enough valid concerns raised by you guys. The sensible thing to do is to not trade, but if I had a premium on bench...
Fun thing to do.
Yeah, I would push it. I think I'd just push it. Whatever. What's the worst that could happen?
It should probably also be raised, depending on whether you're going for league wins or overall rankings, that if you're going for league wins, you probably need to be that bit more conservative because you will need those trades come final time. What do you guys think about Ablett straight to Hodge?
We did get that question from Jordan Donaldson this week, and I think it's an interesting one if it relieves some pressure in your back line as well. For example, if you have a forward mid premium, like I said, Bontempelli, that's able to come into that midfield spot if you need Hodge to pivot into your back line, that could be potentially really advantageous. But otherwise, unless you have some elaborate DPP situation where you have extra cover and you're not getting hurt too bad by bringing in a defender, I think you're probably strictly better going with a traditional midfielder who can average 120 potentially.
So you don't think that Hodge can compete with the likes of Mundy and Hanbury and Pritis?
I don't think so, no.
Like, that's a long time ago, but he has averaged over 115 in his career three times.
Absolutely. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I don't think I would punt on that at this stage in the season. I'd just go for the midfielder, and then I wouldn't have to worry about it. Whereas with Hodge, it feels like if he gets put at half back one game and just gets tagged out, puts in a 40, you will just be hating the fact that you paid. He's 600,000 right now. He's had 165 in his price movements for 3 weeks. So like I said, I'd only bring him in if he relieves pressure on your back line and you have decent cover for your midfield. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't. I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
I just wonder whether we're seeing Hodge be able to do what Lewis did on the run home last year, where Lewis just went completely nuts for 10 weeks. I think that you're absolutely right that the safer pick is definitely these genuine midfielders. The other thing is that Hodge would have reasonably high ownership, so it's like a negative play to bring him in a sense. But he definitely has the potential to rival with the very best midfielders, I would suggest. Because, I mean, he is one of the best midfielders in the game, and he is actually playing midfield pretty much every week lately in a period where the Hawks are completely dominating. So I think that you're completely right that there's a lot of risks attached to it, but if he does keep that midfield role, he is likely to at least match the Hanbury, Pritis, Mundys of this world.
I just had a quick look at Hawks' run home. The round 22, Brisbane Lions at Aurora Stadium, and round 23, Carlton at the MCG. So possibly a bit of a rest risk at that point.
So we talked about what to do with Gary Ablett if you have three or four trades. If you had five or more trades, though, I think the temptation would be massive with his price tag to downgrade to somebody closer to the 500k mark and take that money to bring in somebody like Hodge for your weakest defender, or bring in a Brett Delidio for your weakest forward. If you're still going to have three trades left after that, I think that's more than a valid strategy. So for the people who are looking for midfielders around the 500k mark, that's the question from Alex W on Twitter this week. Who do you guys reckon tops that list? We've got Sloan. Paul Maltman has mentioned he's gone round 3, Gaz to Sloan, round 4, Sloan to Gaz, and now he's considering round 17, Gaz to Sloan again. Sloan's actually the cheapest one of all the options.
Very cheap, but seems very risky that he's missed 2 chunks of the season already this year and came back early again wearing a helmet.
They say once bitten, twice shy. I've been twice bitten already by Sloan. I brought in Sloan for Gaz, as our commenter did, and then I also brought in Sloan again when he was pretty cheap, so I can't hit on Sloan, I'm afraid.
Okay. How about Tom Rockliffe, who, you know, he's cheap option many times this season. If you still didn't have him, he scored a 50 last week, which obviously is disheartening. Would that turn you off him? He's only 505,000, though.
Pretty disappointing. I was at the Bombers game, so I didn't see him play, but watching his scores, and they certainly weren't going up very fast.
Maybe a couple more attractive options here from Pat Villanova. Lewis or Selwood? So again, value options. Lewis just scored a 150. So since he's bottomed out at 440, he's actually lifted 50,000 now. 125, 92, 96, and 150, his last 4 scores. I don't think he's a 115 averager, but he could certainly push 110 if he stays reasonably consistent on the run home. Surely that's pretty decent at 500,000. You've been burnt all season, Mark, so maybe you can speak.
Yeah, he's a really tricky one because his disposal is either the worst player in the AFL or just ridiculously good. He doesn't have an in-between level. Been extremely frustrating. He's had a few good weeks. He's a huge, huge risk to bring him in. But I guess you could say the same about Selwood, that Selwood's only really had the one good week now. I did like his game on the weekend, Marcus. I'd be interested to hear what you thought about that because he did seem to maybe benefit from a bit of rest because he did get that extra week because of the Adelaide game. He has been carrying some sort of injury all year or been tired this year. That's the first game where he seemed to have been really running freely and really scoring like the Selwood that we know.
I'd agree with that completely. Don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think it's a sign of good things. Like I said, I've been hesitant to recommend him all season, but once I've seen a sign of him turning things around, and like you said, had 3 of the last 4 weeks off prior to this game, then scores a 142, shows good things on field in terms of, like you said, moving around freely. I think absolutely this can be the time where he breaks out of his shell. As long as he has a few 140s on the run home, he could be a pretty standout pick at 490k.
Realistically, he started the season as a potential 120 averager. I'm actually considering him in the Hanbury Mundy Prittis group for myself because price is completely irrelevant to me. I know it's probably a huge ask. We've only seen one game, but the potential is always there. Bartel's back, so that might help him out a little bit. Duncan's back, so that should help him out. Plus, he's had like a really good chunk of footy off in the middle of the season. He seems like the sort of guy that we've seen it happen a lot, that on the run home, he's actually averaged 130 plus.
Big fan of the pick. I think one of the top selections for this week and bottomed out. Break even of 53, so timing is good as well. Scott McNaughton's asked about Scott Thompson, who's a little bit more of a POD, but he's just been dominating from Sammy Jacobs' ruck taps. Scored a 46 in round 15, which is a fair blip, but that means that he's bottomed out at 522,000. He's averaging 110 for the season, so some massive games there. Pretty good for a 130 plus game. I think he's done it at least 5 times this season. Obviously, being older is a little bit of a risk, but he looks like he's back to his dominant clearance winning self. And I have been wrong in the past to doubt Scott Thompson when he's in this sort of form. So I'm tempted to say he could continue it.
Yep, you're probably right with all of that.
I'm surprised looking at his scores to see so many big ones. Yeah, the 5 scores above 130, that's pretty impressive stuff. And age is a bit of a factor, I guess, but he's been a pretty consistent player over quite a number of years now, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him play out the season and score well.
And Adelaide are right in that hunt for the top 8 together with Geelong, so I think they'll probably go down to the final game in round 22 or 23 when we face off against each other, so that'll be a massive 8-point game. So you'd think that he's not going to get rested for any small niggles. Steel sidebar. Bottom 532k is the last midfielder that I want to talk about and potentially the best that we've talked about so far. 107, 122, 117, 117. This guy broke out last year and was massive. In the game that he got injured in round 1 this year where he broke his thumb, he scored 136 in 3 quarters before going down. So he was on track for like a 160 game. He had a quiet patch for a while there, but Steel Sidebottom could be a 115 averaging player in that same bracket that we mentioned before with Prittis.
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely has that potential. The fact that the good run of four games in a row has come in losses is probably a good thing, because they're not going to lose all their games for the rest of the season. Yeah, I really like the Steel Sidebottom pick. He's got some monsters in him. Like, he could have games where he scores above 170. He could also go pretty low as well. I think that he's sort of the reason why I think people should maybe not go the most obvious pick in this situation, because we've spoken about a lot of guys so far, and we've spoken about at least 6 to 10 that can average 115 plus. So I think that if you just pick the one that everyone else does, that's not necessarily going to give you the chance to get a leg up for the rest of the season. So yeah, I like going a bit different with this pick. Sidebottom's definitely a bit different. Yeah, I quite like the pick.
I'd echo those thoughts, Mark. I think he'd probably by far be the lowest selection numbers of all the people that we've mentioned today. So great little point of difference, and yeah, huge scoring potential, as we've mentioned.
I know that my mate Nate did bring him in for Beams on the weekend when Beams was laid out.
I'm a little bit torn splitting him and Selwood, but let's do a top three anyway. Mm.
Is that a top three, including everyone?
All the midfielders that we talk about, let's just do a top three. Consider premium options and value
options. Except for Fife, Pendles and Danger.
Yeah, because they're fairly popularly selected amongst our community. So I might go first. I think I'd have Hanabry as just the premium selection to me. He just looks in top-notch form. And although he scored a 60 on the weekend, it's rare that a Sydney team gets squashed like that. And then the next player that I'd have is, I'll go Steel Sidebottom. Very, very tempted by him this week. I've been hoping for an opportunity to bring him in. Ablett going down looks like a decent opportunity to do that. And of course, I already have Joel Selwood. Probably I've been burnt a little bit by him, but he rounds up by number three. So Hanabry, Sidebottom, and Selwood, they're my top three for the week. Mark?
That's interesting, mate, because I felt when I brought up Selwood, you seemed a bit flat afterwards that I might be suggesting that. I also have Hanabry at number one, I think. Just having super season. I have Selwood at number two. I'm not getting much love for this out in public. I think it's a very risky pick, especially just off one game, really. Everything just seems to be adding up in my head that Selwood could just go nuts from here. So, yeah, that's why I have him at number two. And I don't think I could pick Sidebottom. I actually quite like the way that he plays, but I already have Swanee. I already have Pendles. I really don't want another Collingwood player in my team. I'd end up bloody barracking for them when they're playing. It's not what an Essendon supporter is supposed to do. So my third one would probably be Mundy, and Pritis pretty much splitting it with Mundy. I think that Pritis is probably the safest pick out of the lot. So him and Mundy would be sitting in slot number three.
Faz, your top three?
So I've managed to successfully talk myself out of Mundy, I think, despite leading off with him being my number one pick. I'll go with Hanabry as well. I think that's just a great pick. Their run home looks stellar. As you said, he does look like the best midfielder in a pretty stellar midfield. So Hanabry number one for me. I'd go Sidebottom number two. I think at the start of the year, I was thinking about picking him as a starting pick, and it was only buy structure that really
put me out of it.
So Sidebottom number two, and I'm going to go with Luke Hodge as number three. I know it's risky, but I think I'm one of the only people out there that doesn't own Luke Hodge, and I would love to have him in my team. He's just in a...
I don't got him.
Oh, you don't have him either? So, no. Yeah, that's it's pretty rough, isn't it, watching from the sidelines while Hodge humps out these big scores.
The worst part of it is that Marcus and I both picked him at the start of last year, and that's what scared me off this year. Yeah. He has been an absolute staple in my Supercoach teams ever since I started, and I am a massive Luke Hodge fan, so it's very hard to watch him dominate.
You know, I dared to ask the question in the preseason, so as soon as I had the opportunity, I was like, I was a fool not to do it, and he's exceeded all expectations. So that's an interesting pick, Faz, and it'd be interesting to see how much his ownership stats actually go up after the weekend. And in fact, if people do a double trade and actually bring Luke Hodge in anyway, if they can side swap all the way down to somebody like Steel Sidebottom or Joel Selwood and pick up a tidy, how much is that? Huge amounts of cash, almost 200K. So I think there'll be some big spending this week if people have trades. Otherwise, clinging on for dear life. In the forward line, Bartel and Bunnell, we got some questions about, but yeah. I'm assuming relative to the other forwards, they don't stand out as much as Hodge.
Yeah, geez, if Bunnell can keep his spot, he looked fantastic on the weekend, and I'm really glad that I kept him. I'm probably one of the few people that did. I'm not sure what his ownership stats are like. Yeah, he looked awesome. I think the forward that really stands out for me is Deledio, and I've got Deledio, and his low side is just like mid-90s, and he's pumps out 130s, 140s pretty regularly as well. So I think he's a standout.
Like, normally Delidio in the forward line is a little bit of a liability. That's where his poor games come. Richmond have an off game here or there, and then Delidio just gets 60 points in the forward line. But they're doing well pretty much every week, and he's always getting those goals together with his posies. And like you said, that leads to a low basement and a ceiling that's massive. I think he could potentially be in that sort of Hodge class, which pains me to admit it because he's in your team, Mark, and not mine. But
he's just so damn efficient.
Yeah.
The commentators will say, oh, he's had a poor game because he's had 19 touches, but every single one of them hits a target and they're all contested, and ability to mark above his head in the forward line is awesome. And yeah, he's super impressive.
Last question about Gary Ablett. Thomas has one trade left with Gary Ablett out. Oh no. So worst case scenario, if you had one
trade. I think there are worse. I did hear someone this week that used their last trade to bring in Gary Ablett.
Okay. Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Well, look, if you haven't deleted your team, because that guy probably just deleted his team. If you haven't deleted your team, you have one trade left and Gary Ablett goes down. Do you hold him or do you wait until you face a donut?
I'm pretty sure he's confirmed out, isn't he?
He's out for the season, but do you wait until there's a donut that you have to deal with? What if you get three donuts in your back line for the rest of the season? Is that better negating that if you have, you know, Mitch Wallace, for example, in your midfield, or Steele in your midfield? It's your last trade. Your last trade.
Good question.
And I mean, you could potentially pivot Gary Ablett to your forward line or to your back line if you have any mid forward or defense. Yeah.
Yeah, people are going to have those up.
So he could be your last trade for anything that goes wrong. Do you give that up this week because he's out for the season and he's at 690,000?
No, I don't think you do. I think you pose it quite well, Marcus, that I think that you just have to wait till you realize where the cover's needed.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, with 6 weeks to go, that's a long time. I wouldn't want to be doing...
You will need the trade.
Yeah. I'll be doing 5 weeks with zero trades left. So, yeah, I think it's hold, unfortunately. Sorry, Thomas.
That's crazy. Okay, so there are some people with trades that I will be holding this week. Those of you only have one. I'm sorry. If you had two, you trade, though. Yeah. I would.
Yeah, that sounds about right. There's a whole bunch of people that I was talking to on Saturday that were tossing up. They had, say, three trades left, whether they were going to bring him in or not bring Ablett in, and some of them did, and down to one, and they're not feeling very good about themselves, and some of them just managed to convince themselves that it wasn't a good idea, and they're absolutely riding their luck right now.
Off Ablett now, that was fairly comprehensive, so that should cover everyone. We're just going to get a rookie rundown from the rookie expert, Faz. Alex Brown from Essendon in the back line. Hugh Goddard, back forward rookie. They're the two standouts on the bubble this week. Do you want to give us a quick spiel?
Yeah, quite like Alex Brown. Been watching him with interest, hoping that he'd come back for quite a while now. He's missed two full years of footy, out for 2013. I can't remember what that was for, but 14 with an ACL. Named in the back line as a super coach player, but has been playing a lot through the midfield for Essendon. Game one, he got subbed out early after a heavy knock, so only got 24 super coach. But last week against Port, had 17 touches and kicked a goal for 84 super coach. Definitely think he's not much of a risk of losing his spot in the side. Essendon are well out of contention, so we're going to play the kids, see what they've got, and we decide who stays on the list for next year. So can't see much wrong with Alex Brown. In terms of rookies, I think he's got quite strong job security. Hugh Goddard was pick 21 in last year's draft. He's got the defensive forward flexibility, so I guess that is handy if you needed a rookie in either spot. Not really that.
Or if you have Higgins.
If you have Higgins. So he I have Higgins.
Awesome if you have Higgins. Oh, I love back forward flexibility. That's just crazy amounts of fun.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's pretty much only for Higgins owners that it's relevant, because I had a look through the other forward defensive options, and it's, I think, Jerry McGovern is the only other guy, and I think he's out injured at the moment, so probably not relevant to too many people. Looks good on debut with 72 super coach. He's been playing as a lockdown defender down back. He was playing on the resting ruckman against Richmond and got 72 super coach last week. A bit quieter against Melbourne, 49 super coach, playing on doors, and he got subbed out of the game. I don't think that means he's going to get dropped. I think they're going to stick with him, because it looked like for quite a while he was right on the cusp of selection, kept being named as an emergency. Now that he's got his chance, I think they'll stick with him for a little while at least, but I don't expect him to score too highly. He's a key defender. He scored pretty well as a key defender in his junior career, but I think in the AFL he's a little bit undersized, so I'm not expecting him to pull out some massive scores. If you needed a rookie down back, I'd definitely be taking Alex Brown over Hugh Goddard. And just finally, if you need one in the midfield, Jaden Laverde from the Bombers is still pretty cheap, $155,000. He's a forward mid dual position player, only played the three games, so I had one price rise. Same things apply with job security regarding Alex Brown. I think he's going to keep getting games. I quite like the look of him. I'm pretty excited about him. I think Mark would probably agree with me there. Verde's a star to watch of the future.
Last question now, the Tommy Mitchell question that we brought up from Dunny before. So, subbed. What is the go? What is the go? Right. Notice my slightly positive attitude toward this question.
Pretty chipper there,
bro. You think that we can have a read on what John Longmire is doing with Tom Mitchell? No. He has been a bit down in recent weeks. He certainly hasn't been producing the numbers that he was earlier in the year.
We got a tweet, you know, I don't know how legitimate it is, but saying that Subiaco is a wide ground and he's not the quickest player. And so maybe that's why he was the sub, but that he may not continue to be the sub. So it may just be a 1 week thing. So
there's a few players in that team that you would think would go out before Tom Mitchell, the Zach Jones, Brandon Jack sort of players.
I think there is some concern that Heaney being in seems to coincide with his job security being a little bit more shaky. So there's some whispers, but I think if you have him, you kind of got to hold on. He still scored a lot of points when he came on in that short period of time.
He did. 36 when the game was already over. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it was like 47 AFL fantasy points. So, like you said, he got scaled down because the game was over. He had a big one. Anyway, that's it for this week's show. Thank you again, Faz, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Hope your Gaz trades work out well. Well, mate, no, don't work out well. I need a rise in the ranking from 15,000. So everybody else fall over, and that's the only way I can do anything from this point.
Mark, well done again this week. Only thanks. One digit off the top 500, mate.
Thanks, man. Hopefully I really can keep pushing forward. I'm low on trades, so I'm going to need a bit of luck. It's amazing how humbling this game can be sometimes. You feel like a genius a couple of weeks ago with telling everyone to bring Ablett in, and then it just all turns to crap. And though it's things beyond your control, yeah, it's quite a humbling game, and you should probably always just try and remember that.
As we try and do each week, let's keep our chin up as a community. We did have one blip, but hopefully next week we recover. We capture that first place again, get that winning feeling back, and everybody gets back to some high-scoring stuff. I know as a community, we were pretty aggressive about Gary Ablett, and sometimes unfortunate things happen, but the good thing is, as a Supercoach community, we've been through the rigors enough that sometimes you just got to step back from the game and understand it's just a game, because there are a lot of people getting very frustrated at the moment. At least you gave it a crack. It's better to go down swinging than have 10 trades left and wondering what you could have done. So all the best with the week, guys, and catch you again next week. See ya.
See ya.
Hey guys.